screw that up. Before we transition, I just wanted to emphasize a couple of points that have already been made by both of the previous presenters. The first point is persistence. If you haven't heard that already, hear it. You're going to hear it many more times. I can't think of a mechanism that is the most perfect way of teaching humility than grant applications, because you will get burned several times. You're going to get angry. You're going to wonder whether people read your grant or not. And sometimes we do, or sometimes I'm not sure whether we do or not. Sometimes we don't understand what you wrote. It's clear to you, but for the rest of us, it may not be as clear. So be persistent. I think the point about emphasizing pursuing the question that you're interested in and what brings passion to your life is absolutely critical. That's what keeps you going. The other point that I think has also been made is that strong science is best conducted in a multidisciplinary context, with a multidisciplinary team. And for those of you who are working in terms of transition to careers, you want to learn that now. You can't know everything. You're not an expert in everything. You have to make sure you know what you're doing, but then make sure you surround yourself with supportive people who, in fact, can supplement what you're doing and make the best possible science. Just because somebody's an expert, by the way, doesn't necessarily mean that they're an effective mentor. Those are very different skills and very different skill sets. Okay, the next speaker is Dr. Donna Pincus, who is currently a research associate professor at Boston University and director of the Child and Adolescent Fear and Anxiety Treatment Program at the Center of Anxiety and Related Disorders at Boston University. Dr. Pincus, and now let's see if we can switch this. Where's the team? What you're doing, you can take.
Well, I just want to thank everybody for having me today, and it was just delightful to be able to hear about other people's career paths as well, and I'm sure that there'll be common themes that come up in a lot of the things that we're talking about today. And I just wanted to start by talking about where I'm from. I'm from the Center for Anxiety and Related Disorders at Boston University, and for those of you who don't know where that is, if you know Boston at all and you've ever seen the Red Sox game, you might have seen the CITGO sign as one of these big icons in Boston, and we're located actually in that white building right underneath the CITGO sign is where we do, where the site is for our Child and Adolescent Fear and Anxiety Treatment Program, the site of a lot of our clinical research. And it's been the place where I've really launched much of my career over the past 7 years. So to begin, though, at many points in my career, I've had these choice points. And I think that at those times, I found that consulting with mentors, that some of the mentors have been naturally assigned to me throughout life, but that some of them I've actually adopted on my own. And I wanted to make sure I acknowledge them. One is David Barlow, who's been the primary mentor on my K Award. Sheila Iberg, who I've known now for the past 9 years, who I met when I was an intern at the University of Florida. And I decided to adopt Sheila. When I got down to Florida, I decided that I really would like to learn parent-child interaction therapy. I asked if I could join her research lab, her child research lab, and we've been collaborating ever since. So, you know, as I go through, I'll certainly bring out points that I think could be helpful to others. And one of the things that was helpful to me is knowing that it's okay to sometimes adopt a mentor or say, will you take me on? And these are the things I'm interested in, and to really be assertive sometimes. And another person I'd like to thank, he might not know that I consider him a mentor, but Joel Sherrill, I feel, has been a really outstanding mentor to me, especially in the initial years of my K Award. Right now I'm in the fourth year, and I find that I always learn something whenever I talk to Joel. I feel like, you know, certainly the intellectual curiosity about what the next steps might be, and he truly seems to love the science, and that's something I've really enjoyed and I've appreciated. I also want to thank Tom Ollendick and Alice Friedman, the children and families who participated in our treatments, and National Institute of Mental Health, obviously, for supporting our research. And I have pictured there just some of our students in the entire child program at the Center for Anxiety and Related Disorders. So if any of you have ever done treatment research, you know that it can't be done in isolation. And I need co-therapists and, you know, research assistants, and many of them have worked long hours in trying to help push our, you know, research ahead, and to just be there to work with the children, to work with the siblings of the kids sometimes, to help get families in. And I feel really, really very appreciative and grateful to everyone for their help. So to begin with, I just wanted to go over some of the things that I'll be presenting today. I'll be going over my career path and talk to you about some of those choice points that I had referred to, but then also talking about how to develop a patient-oriented research career in child anxiety, which is my area of research. And so I'll talk about building a clinical treatment program with a solid infrastructure. And what do you do when you start, when your program really only recruits very few kids, and here you want to build a grant and you want to say, hey, we recruit lots of kids, but you really don't yet. So you have to actually, as a first step, start to build a program. And as I came into the center in 1999, that was one of my biggest tasks, was to start to first build a program before I even was able to put grants in. And also talk about some of the challenges and rewards of conducting treatment research and some of the things that I learned along the way. And one of the things that have been touched on so far in the first two presentations, and I think probably in all of our presentations today, is balancing work and family. You know, I was going to a meeting with the dean this week because I'm applying for a tenure track position at Boston University. Right now I have a research associate professor line, and I was hoping to get into the tenure line. And as I'm there, all dressed up with my suit on and my trench coat on, I had my hands in my pockets because it was, of course, another freezing day in Boston. And I put my hands in my pockets and was thinking about this talk and a lot of the things coming up during the week. And on one side of my pocket, for those of you who have a one-year-old, you'll know, I had a biter biscuit, which is a little cookie, in one hand. And then the other side was a little Fisher-Price little person on the other pocket. And I thought to myself, boy, I really feel like a blend of work and family, even just right now standing here. And so as I walked into the dean, I decided I'd certainly be better to hide those things and not show them. But certainly, it's certainly a changed person. I had a baby 1 year ago and have another one on the way. And so I'll be talking a little bit about the striving to achieve balance. And I really thought about what are the top five things, say, that I have learned over the past year in trying to achieve some of that balance, and thought I would share with you just some of the things that I've learned. And then certainly also want to discuss the next steps that I've taken beyond the K frontier in my clinical research program, and some suggestions that you might find helpful as well. So to just go over a career path, certainly we'd like to talk about my beginnings, so even earlier than starting at the Center for Anxiety. If we look at the beginning here at Brandeis University, I actually began thinking I might want to go for a PhD in developmental psychology because my interests were very much in basic developmental processes like children's metacognition, social cognition, how do kids think about things at different ages, and started thinking that, you know, I certainly got myself involved in lots of research assistantships, helping people with dissertations and things like that. And you know, it was also, at the same time, I had these interests in clinical populations. So during the summers, I found myself attracted to jobs in which I'd worked with kids who were really experiencing lots of the risk factors that we think about for psychopathology. So kids in Head Start or after-school programs or other kids in underserved areas of New York. And I started realizing that my interests, now I look back and I can think my interests really had merged and were really more in terms of developmental psychopathology. What happens, how can we help protect these kids that are at risk? And for those kids who are already showing signs of psychopathology, how could we develop treatments to help them so that we can help them at earlier and earlier stages? And I found that early childhood tended to be my passion and how we can start to help those kids that were maybe in the corner and weren't participating in the activities like the others. And then to just start to understand, you know, what we could do to help those children as well. So I decided to go to graduate school. I went to Binghamton University, and although there wasn't a specific child program there, I tried to carve out a child program for myself and tried to come up with, although I had a great training in behavioral theories and, you know, clinical psychology, I also tried to develop practica that might really help me to, you know, to really solidify some of my interests in child work, and specifically in internalizing disorders in childhood. So I worked in specialized foster care. I worked at Head Start. I even at one point decided to create a practicum at a primary care center on one of the hospitals in Binghamton, so that I was able to work with some of the kids who first are referred to the pediatricians. And that's really sometimes the first step where parents would bring their child. And now I know when something's wrong with my daughter, it's really the first place that I go. And was able to be the person when there was something like child had a stomach ache and there was no medical reason, they would then refer them to me when I do a psychological evaluation and try and implement even some basic education with the parents and things like that, and found that to be extremely helpful. And I also, while in graduate school, found that my interests really were solidifying in child anxiety disorders. And, you know, although at Binghamton they say, you know, really, you know, you should, you know, obviously do really good research and do what you're passionate about, but my advisor was saying, you know, Donna, treatment research, you know, that, I don't know if you understand what you're getting into, this is a whole different thing, this is a lot of work. But I chose to do treatment research for both my master's thesis and dissertation, so hence some of my gray hairs developed early on. But I decided to, for my master's thesis, develop an 11-week treatment program for children who are afraid of the dark, and also had a parent component. And at that time, that was sort of a novel thing. Now we're learning that parent components to anxiety treatment are very important. And then also for my dissertation, I developed a treatment program for kids. It's a brief intervention that we did in the school setting, so with third and fourth graders throughout Binghamton City Schools and some other area schools, where we tried to develop a way for them to cope with everyday stressors. So that was another very large, kind of a large-scale study, at least for the dissertation. But what I found was that I really enjoyed working with the children and also enjoyed seeing ways that some of the clinical treatment could then feed further research questions. And when making a decision about internship, this was again one of those choice points where I wasn't sure where to go, and decided, do I stay in the Northeast, someplace that feels comfortable, or do I branch out someplace that, you know, might feel like it's a little bit more of a risk in terms of a location and going away from family and things like that. But I chose the University of Florida Health Sciences Center in the Child and Pediatric Specialty track, primarily because of the opportunities for working with both adults and children, and also for doing assessment and treatment and getting outstanding in training in both. And it's at University of Florida where I felt that I sort of asked Sheila to adopt me as one of her mentees, and certainly learned a lot and have continued collaborations with her since then. And when it was time for looking for a job, I thought to myself, well, what would be a really good fit? And we've been talking a lot today about good fit or a good match with mechanisms, but also in terms of career. I thought, you know, if I had a place where I could really implement child anxiety treatment research, treatment outcome research, or a place where, you know, I could continue on the lines of some of the things that were most passionate to me, it would be best. So I opened up the APA monitor and I said, well, let me just see what's out there. And it just so happened that there was a job that was advertised for the Center for Anxiety and Related Disorders as the director of the child program. And as I read the description, it wasn't hard to see that some of the things I had done, it wasn't hard to, you know, sometimes you apply to a job and you feel like you have to try to fit yourself to the job, and this felt like more of a natural fit. So I applied and interviewed and wound up getting the job. And so I was very excited to have been hired as the director of the child program. So in 1999, when I first got there, we saw approximately 50 kids a year. So that's total amongst all the different disorders, and I'll show you some graphs of what that really looks like. And the kids were between ages 7 and 17. And now the child program assesses about 160 children per year, and we have a wider age range. So partly with my K award, I'm interested in early child anxiety. So I had to figure out, how are we going to start to recruit these 4 to 8-year-olds who I'm interested in recruiting for our project? So one of the things that I've done as part of my career is realize the importance of getting the word out to the community regarding our programs. So if any of you have ever been on the web and looked up child anxiety, just put that into a Google search, or any of the words that you think that parents might look to search, there are a lot of information out there that is not accurate, and parents are steered in the wrong directions, and many of the parents come to us after years of having the wrong therapies. And so I've always felt it's very important for us to get the word out however possible, and I created a website, childanxiety.net, to try to get the word out more about our programs to the public, and also about accurate information about what we know, at least initially, that works for kids. And also started doing lots of talks to the community, so at pediatricians' offices and school districts and as many places as I could, trying to really reach out to helping the community in the Boston area and even wider areas beyond Boston know about some of the programs that we were offering, especially since we were hoping that even in the future some of them would be funded and that we could offer free treatment for kids. So most of the kids are seen at our center for treatment, and some are referred out. And now we have a 15-member team. We have 8 full-time graduate students supported now in some of the funded projects that we have, postdocs and research assistants, and most kids are seen for about 8 to 12 sessions of therapy. So just show you some of the growth of the treatment program at CARD, and again, speaks to what you've mentioned about perseverance and really trying hard to get out there and not be afraid to speak and talk to the community about our programs, but certainly our growth has been pretty steady over the past years. And now we, you can see the difference between 99 and 2005 in terms of kids with separation anxiety and panic and some of these areas that I know are understudied. And we certainly have now been able to recruit more kids with these different disorders. So I'd like to just tell you a little bit about what the K ward is that I've been working on, and I'm now in the fourth year. And this is on the treatment of young children with separation anxiety disorder using parent-child interaction therapy. So if any of you have known about parent-child interaction therapy, it's actually a treatment that has a large evidence base, but it's for children with oppositional defiant disorder or other behavior disorders. And what I've done is adapted this treatment for kids with separation anxiety, because many of the core components to the parent training are actually very applicable. It's many of the things that our child anxiety researchers are saying, hey, we need this in our treatments. And so I'm going to just show you a little bit about what we're doing so that I can illustrate some of the things I've learned in terms of rewards and challenges along the way that I've had to navigate. So first of all, we know that separation anxiety is a very prevalent anxiety disorder in childhood, most prevalent actually in childhood, and distressing and interfering for families. I mean, many of the families that come in, they describe their child as being like the Velcro kid, and I can't get away from me, you know, and I can't even be in one room of the house without my child. You know, he can't even use the restroom without me. I mean, parents are really talking about this being very distressing to them and very upsetting. Kids can't go to play dates. They can't go to birthday parties, all the things you might think of that a four-year-old or five-year-old might start to do. So it's, and yet many of the interventions that we have been mostly conducted with older children, and they've been more cognitively focused and probably would be developmentally inappropriate for very young kids. So I don't know many four-year-olds that could tell you what kind of thoughts are on their mind and or if they even have a thought. But very few studies have been undertaken, and actually, as I was looking at the literature, there's no controlled trials included children younger than 7 at the time I was submitting the K award. So certainly it's a critical developmental period, and we really need to establish some critical interventions for separation anxiety at its earliest stages. So certainly it's been suggested that child anxiety researchers start to integrate what we already know has been shown in some other areas of child work, and not just start to recreate brand new treatments for every single disorder, but what do we have that we know that really works, and incorporate some of the interventions that might be able to alter the over-controlling and critical parenting style that we know is part of child anxiety work. And so parent-child interaction therapy actually seemed to get at this first very well. And so what we decided to do was to actually apply separation anxiety disorder and apply parent-child interaction therapy to kids with separation anxiety disorder. And at first, we kept the treatment the same as Sheila Iberg had developed it. It was parent-child interaction therapy, and I decided to. We had three patients for pilot data. We had done a multiple baseline design and had good results there. So initial pilot data always helps, as we've been talking about this morning. And I wound up getting the K award. But I want to tell you about the process of what has happened. So after seeing the first 9 kids, and this is sort of one of my challenges that I'll pose out to you, so you might have your career development plan as you've written it, but be prepared to be flexible, because sometimes things don't work out exactly as you've planned them, and it's important most of all to be very sensitive and be a good clinician and be a good scientist practitioner and to glean information about the patients that you're seeing to help reinform the science. So although the first 9 children seen, the results were positive, so they had all decreased on their, you know, many of the key measures that we were looking at, some of the scores were also still in the clinical range. And so parents were still asking me for additional education about anxiety, and some of them were saying, I'm unsure of how to, even though my child now and I have a good warmth and attachment and there's other things that feel better about our house, my child's still not going to the birthday party. My child is still not doing some of these things. And so they were asking me for some additional help that was not part of the PCIT standard protocol. So I called Joel, I called all of my research mentors at the time. I started thinking to myself, it didn't feel right to just keep going and seeing more kids if I'm starting to see patterns in the data. So what we had done is looked at some of the acceptability questionnaires, really looked carefully at the data, and utilized parent feedback and my own clinical observations of treatment sessions. And one of the positive things is that being a therapist, as one of the therapists in the study, I was able to then take this information and feed it back into modifying the treatment. So what we've done is added a phase to the standard PCIT protocol, and now that this would actually address some of the specific concerns of parents and helping them to make concrete progress. And so I had to think about things like where to place this new treatment. I had already seen 9 kids, so now the clock sort of starts ticking again in terms of me having to still recruit my numbers, but I have a little bit less time now. So I felt a little bit of pressure there, but most importantly, I felt very good about what we did in terms of changes and had to think about where to place this new segment of treatment. So we decided to place it between the already existing two segments of treatment in PCIT, and we wanted to think about ways to maximize efficacy of treatment and make it relevant for families. And so this is, I've decided to call it, to keep it in line with the rest of the treatment phases, there was child-directed interaction and parent-directed interaction, and in the middle I put bravery-directed interaction, and this is how I've tried to keep the format very similar to the other phases of treatment, and it's worked very well with families, and I'm not going to show you data and things like that, but I'll just let you know summaries. So we've seen significant reductions in the frequency of separation anxious behaviors at post-treatment, and this is for, little 4 to 8 year olds that we have in there. And we've also noticed concomitant changes for most kids. I had one father come in and tell me that this was the best thing that ever happened to his son and himself, that he had not only felt that he had learned some skills to help with separation anxiety, but the quality of the relationship that he had, developed with his son had substantially changed because of the new skills that he had acquired. And some of this is really the reason that we're all in this work. I mean, some of that, that kind of feedback that you can get from families. So it certainly seemed like there was a benefit of adding this anxiety exposure component. And so part of it was also helping parents to feel more tolerant of their emotions and things like that. And certainly we will continue participant enrollment over the next 1.5 years now with the goal of evaluating efficacy of this modified PCIT for treating separation anxiety in young children. So some of the challenges I had along the way were building a clinical treatment program with a solid infrastructure first, so trying to recruit kids, doing the talks in the community to help get the word out about our program so that I could submit a grant that I could actually say that, okay, I have a good rationale that we do get these numbers of kids at the center. So for a little while, we had to work on that. And then also thinking about modifying a treatment plan, modifying an original treatment manual, and negotiating offers for collaboration and knowing which offers to take. And I tried to think about accepting offers for collaboration that really fit under some of the umbrellas of my research and treatment plan and career development plan that I had outlined. But besides, you know, a lot of the fancy measures that we had, I felt like the rewards, to go through now to the rewards, one of the children in the treatment program drew this picture for me after she filled out all the self-reports, you know, measures that I had given her. She said, well, Dr. Pincus, I can tell you how I changed, and this is better than your measures. And so she said, on this side was boo, no, no, and that's how I felt before. And I couldn't do anything, and I couldn't go anywhere, and that's how I feel now. And I say yes, yes to everything. So I thought that was just another really good example of the rewards that I feel like we all experience. So one of them is children are getting better, we're making contributions to our field, and certainly have felt the connection between being a scientist practitioner and how the two can really work together in a partnership. I've had opportunities to work with adults and children, which I felt to be exciting. So I have the parents that I'm working with, and I feel like I'm working with a population that's motivated to see changes, because these are anxious kids, often come with anxious parents, and in some ways, even though it's not a good thing, the parents are very motivated to comply with some of the things that we're asking them to do, and actually some of them have even gotten into their own treatment as a result of learning and watching their children start to get better. I want to just briefly talk about being a good researcher and a good parent, and could they go hand in hand as we're talking about, you know, trying to, as I've been trying to build my career as a clinical scientist. Also, you know, had a daughter a year ago, and some of the things I have learned is that, number one, it's okay that not every day will feel perfectly balanced. So we all talk about, oh, can you achieve a balance between work and family? And I think, you know, instead of thinking about it as overall, I think, okay, each day it might not be balanced. Maybe overall, if you average it out over the course of the year, hopefully it'll be somewhat balanced. But there's some days where she has an ear infection and I have a progress report due, and you kind of hope that those things don't happen on the same day, but you know what? Sometimes they do happen on the same day, and you have work to do, and you have, you know, a child who has a high fever that you need to hold, and I'm not willing to compromise on being a good mom, and I'm also not willing to compromise on, you know, the important research that I'm doing. So if sometimes it's becoming creative about when you're doing the work, doing it in the evenings and things like that, so I can really be there for my daughter. But then most of the time I feel like I've been able to, you know, try my best, and I think it's been very helpful to have a good support network, having a supportive spouse, and maybe not saying my career is more important than yours, because my husband's also a psychologist, so also does grant, writes grants and all of this, but we can relate to each other. Sometimes what we'll do is each of us take half a day if we need to, and, you know, I'll go in the morning and he'll go in the afternoon so that we're at least present. And what we decide to do is say, okay, not whose job is more important or whose career is more important, but today, who has the most visible or pressing thing to do, and if one of us needs to stay home with my daughter, we'll work that out. But most importantly, I wanted to talk about the third thing, and I think this is the biggest thing I learned, is that sometimes when you're in the greatest rush, it's actually time to slow down. And so I was on my way to going to this job interview this week, and I was in a rush. Of course, I wanted to make sure I was there with plenty of time, had to bring Sarah to daycare. And as I have her on my hip, trying to open up the car door, my bag's on my shoulders, I'm opening up the car door, and I see her waving. And I don't know who she's just learned how to wave, and I wonder who she's waving at. And I look up at the tree, and I see that it was a windy day, and the tree was waving back and forth, and she was waving to the trees. And it kind of made me stop and remember some of the simpler things in life, and how it's important to stop and look at the trees sometimes, and to actually look at the big picture of life, and even some of the simpler things in life. And I think children, more than anything, help you to do this. And you know, I haven't experienced anything like being a mom has really helped me to experience knowing when it's time to stop and get the big picture, and realizing what's important. I also think that watching and participating in development of your child can be one of life's greatest joys. And you know, here I started with my interest in child development and basic developmental processes, and here I get to watch that every day. Get to watch the development of humor, to watch the development of all these things as I go. So I know I'm out of time. So just to talk about beyond the K frontier, some of the next steps. Currently, we're working on an R01 on adolescent panic disorder treatment. And I'm thinking about also an R01 for a follow-up for my K award, moving from efficacy to effectiveness. And I'm sure I'll be having conversations with folks about how to then move parent-child interaction therapy to the places where the kids are being seen the most, so in some of the clinics and things like that. So that's the treatment study we're doing. And I'll just end with, you know, overall my next steps are to develop new developmentally sensitive treatments and to refine existing treatments for children and adolescents with anxiety disorders, and to continue to examine mechanisms of change and long-term maintenance of change and predictors of treatment success, and to continue to disseminate our treatments to the public. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and if you're interested in moving west, we'd be happy to recruit you to UCLA. That's my commercial for the day. Okay.